Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 226th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, as well as locally on FansFavorite.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability as possible. And, you know, I have to say this. And, you know, don't blame me if I'm confused right now, because I am a little confused. And the reason for this confusion is this, is that apparently, while these negotiations are moving along, supposedly, between Major League Soccer and the Players Union, I'm getting mixed messages because at this particular moment, we are getting these news reports that the league and the union for the players are far apart in negotiations. And the big thing that is right now what the players are asking for is free agency. Now, before I even mention about free agency of what the players want, my sources, as well as those that are close to the situation, like my good friend Carter Krishnire from World Soccer Talk, as well as my good friend Earl Reed from PhillySoccerPage.net, basically talking about there will be no strike. Sources of mine have also said there will be no strike, yet all of a sudden we're seeing reports coming out of the blue that there could be a possibility of a player strike if they don't get free agency. I'm confused. I really am, because, you know, I'm not saying my sources are not credible. I just feel like I don't know what's going on now, because while I do believe in my sources, I don't know if the players actually mean it, or is it a possible smokescreen? I don't know. Or are the players are actually going to challenge the league, and are they going to strike? Now, as of right now, we all know that the old CBA is already expired, yet players are in training camp right now with their respective sides in Major League Soccer. And here's the other thing that it's just really bothering me a little bit here. And usually, you know, I believe in what I've been told. And at the same time, I also believe that maybe there will be no strike. But this has thrown me just a little bit off. Now, I understand why the players are talking about we're going to strike if we don't get free agency. I understand this, because let's be honest with ourselves here. The rules for acquiring players, as well as the allocation process for American players coming back to Major League Soccer, as well as all of these different rules and regulations and everything that's going on, is confusing. And I do understand what the players are asking for. I really do. Because they feel that their rights, once a contract has expired, should no longer be a part of an MLS side. I mean, I can tell you so many times between the whole Lydia Marmol situation between the New York Red Bulls and the Chicago Fire, with the original DP rule, the discovery player rule. That was a headache in itself, because there was no way the Fire was going to let him go to New York unless the Red Bulls gave up someone in compensation of their roster to the Chicago Fire. And that wasn't happening. All because of the whole Juan Carlos Osorio leaving Chicago and coming to manage for the Red Bulls back in 2008. Now, all I can say is this. That is the type of situation that I know that we don't need anymore that goes on in Major League Soccer business. To be honest, Major League Soccer business should change. Should there be complete free agency in MLS? Why not? Maybe it needs to be, written down of what type of free agency they're looking for, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know if free agency, as they have it here in the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NHL, or NBA, is going to equal to what I guess they do around the world with this global game. But, all I can say is there's a lot of questions that really need to be answered, because here's what I'm a little worried about. Let's just say, just for the heck of it, that when you get to the 12th hour and all of a sudden everything has been agreed upon except for the free agency, but they signed the contract anyway, then what was this issue about in the first place? That's the question that I have, if it ever does happen. But the truth of the matter is this. Is that if the players do get their free agency, let me tell you something right now. That would probably be the biggest stroke of genius that the MLS Players Union has ever done. If they get a form of free agency, then you know what? That's still a stroke of genius if it does come. Because I'm telling you right now, I don't know if Commissioner Don Garber and the owners are going to allow that to happen. Because every time Commissioner Don Garber is in front of a microphone, in front of a video camera, he always says, this is our business model, this is what we're working with, this is what has to happen, and that's the end of that. So if there is any form of a budge or a push or a shove with Don Garber and or the rest of the league and the play and the owners, here's the thing. If there's a budge of any sort, I mean, this would be probably the biggest victory. No matter how small it is, it's still a big victory. This would be the biggest victory from the players. But I still have to go to my sources, and I still have to go to them telling me, basically, oh, they're going to sign the deal, they're not going to strike. I don't know anymore. And I'm being honest with everyone. I don't know anymore what the heck is going on. I don't know what the situation will be. Because I'll be honest with you right now, I am just a little bit confused. Not a lot. But the truth is, I am a little bit confused. Because I don't know if this is all just puffing the chest and, we're getting the smoke blown up our butts, or this is a real thing. And they just decided to change their minds and just go ahead and start challenging everything that's going on with MLS. Now, if it happens, it's real, you know what? Then God bless them. Congratulations. Very proud of them. And I really, really do hope that it does happen. Because these guys, I know, they're tired of the shenanigans. They're sick and tired of all these made-up rules. They're sick and tired of, well, we make up the rules as we go along, basically flying off the seat of their own pants in the league office in New York City. And you know what? I just got to say is this. God bless them if it works. Just God bless them if it works, because this would be an amazing victory if the players do succeed in getting free agency or any form of it. Listen, I understand everyone is sick and tired of some of these made-up league rules. When you think you've got them pegged, when you think you've got everything written down, all of a sudden, it changes. Because you don't know what's going to happen the next time that a certain player, either a foreign player or an American player, wants to come back and join an MLS team of their choosing. Because that's the situation. It's the whole allocation order that people are not happy with. It's some of these rules that just shakes your head, scratching your head, or as that old song goes back in the 80s, things that make you go, And you know what? There are times even when I do that. I'm not going to lie. There are times where I'm going, what the heck is going on? Why is it this guy can't come to this team because of the whole allocation order or the rules of player acquisition from the league? I know why. It's basically trying to cut costs and everything and trying to make sure that, it's all fair and balanced and all that stuff. But sometimes it doesn't even work. Sometimes it just doesn't even work that way. And that's the one thing that really bothers us. I don't know if we're going to get full-blown free agency, but if it does happen, we'll see what happens. Good luck to them. But you know what? Once again, a lot of questions need to be answered here from the players' union. What's going on? How is it going on? Why is this happening? Because I'm telling you right now, if we're hearing one thing and they're doing something else, I am just as confused as you guys. I am not sure why this is happening. Once again, from my sources, as well as those from like Carter Krishnire of World Soccer Talk, as well as my good friend Earl Reed from PhillySoccerPage.net, there was nothing going on. And now, because they all think the players are going to sign on the dotted line, there'll be no strike. Now we're getting reports from different places that the players will strike if they don't get their free agency. We will see what happens. But until then, I have to believe it to see it. And right now, I don't know what to believe. I don't know what to say. As of right now, I am honestly, probably like some of you or all of you, I am confused. I am at the moment confused of what is going on. And I really do hope we do get an answer and it's a positive. I really, really do hope we get a positive answer. Because the truth of the matter is this. The 20th season of Major League Soccer is definitely on the line. And let's hope it's a positive thing. If not, then get ready to miss some games. Get ready to watch soccer either through the NASL or the USL Pro League. We'll see what happens. I have a very good show for you tonight. Tape conversation with Doug McIntyre from ESPN The Magazine on the Jurgen Klinsmann situation with the fitness comments. My fellow Soccer Newsday writer, Ray Marcham, as he reported on the new setup for the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, we'll definitely talk about what's going on with the Under-20 World Cup draw. For some of you, the Red Bulls fans out there, of course, going to talk about the the whole Ambrose Oyongo situation. But first things first, let's get to my first guest tonight. He is Vice President of the Southern Legion. Of course, he wants to see MLS come back to Miami. Is Mr. Brian Corey of the Southern Legion. Brian, thank you for your time and welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for having me on.
Not a problem at all. So at this moment right now, give us an update of the situation down in Miami, or at least in Miami-Dade County. What has David Beckham done so far to either get a site, temporary home, or has there been any progress whatsoever?
Well, so as everybody knows, it's been very slow and very quiet for the past 6 months or so. But the good news is, and we are in close communication with all entities involved, including, Miami Beckham United and the city and the county, which is the special form of government that we have down here. Basically, right now, everything has been reactivated. We're starting to see a lot more activity coming from Miami Beckham United spokespeople. We're starting to meet with them. We're starting to meet with city and county commissioners. So I can definitely tell you that things are active right now. And the timeline that they suggested they would, come out and start making announcements seems to be perfectly on track right now. So it's going to be around March or so.
Okay, that's very good to hear. So far, so good. Now, obviously, I would like to see MLS return to Miami. I think, obviously, right. Just like how disappointed everyone was when the Fusion disappeared. I know they're in Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. That's a couple of miles north of downtown in the old Miami area. My parents live in Sunny Isles Beach, so I do sort of know the area pretty good. Not like you know it. You're native. But let me say this. Obviously, it would be fantastic to see a soccer stadium made only for the sport in a very good location in downtown Miami. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk back and forth about certain areas. And the latest article I read was about the old Orange Bowl area. Now, I also have Google Maps, too, so I take a look myself. Is that a very good location? Because so far what I've seen, and this is only from what I've seen, you have Marlins Park, the baseball stadium, and there's only been a smidgen of land left over? Is that enough?
Yes, actually it is. A county commissioner already commissioned an architect to take a look at the site and make sure that it was enough for, at the very least, the 25,000-seat stadium, which is what Beckham's looking for, with expanding into, overtaking a road that's there, it could go even more, which I believe they'd be interested in doing as well. It's interesting, a lot of the evaluation of that site, MLS was interested in that site, in 2009 during the Barca bid, and then more recently they've said that they weren't interested, but the truth is that site is actually only 2.5 miles away from their previous site they were trying to go for. And it's about less than a mile away from downtown Miami. And of course, coming into this market for the MLS and for David Beckham, a lot of people don't know how developed Miami is, especially downtown Miami. No one would assume that NYFC would be plopping a stadium in lower Manhattan or anything like that. So they kind of got a bit of a wake-up call as to, the value of real estate here in Miami and the dense population that exists. But where the Orange Bowl used to be, used to bring 70,000, 80,000 people there regularly. So we like the site, but of course we're working with everybody involved to make sure that we get the best site possible.
Now, that's what it's mostly about, isn't it? Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. No, it's okay. It's just it's not really our job to, evaluate sites, plan, and make decisions. The cool thing about the Orange Bowl site is that it was actually presented alone by the county commission and as well the city. So they're not even responding to inquiries. They're actually acting themselves, which would be contrary to, I think, a lot of media reports that the public isn't cooperating, because, I mean, they're doing more than cooperating. They're volunteering.
No, that's fantastic to hear and everything.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about Commissioner Don Garber for a minute here. Now, obviously,
he was down
when he announced that Miami is now in contention to bring a team in for the 2017 season of Major League Soccer. Now, obviously, he put a timetable down on this project, which, let me just say myself personally, I think that's wrong. I don't think there should be a timetable whatsoever. If Don Garber is truly committed to bringing MLS back to Miami, I mean, there should be no timetable whatsoever. But let me also say this. Since you said that there has been proactive talks from the Miami-Dade County Commissioner and from Miami-Dade County, period, why at this moment Don Garber keeps saying they'll only make a commitment to Miami if there's a downtown stadium, yet we're seeing him, Atlanta, getting a franchise, even though they're building a brand new NFL stadium for the Falcons, and it's going to be there for my MLS Atlanta, and New York City FC is playing in a baseball stadium. Why is there no, I would say, calmness with Miami?
I've called it. Actually, we wrote an open letter to Don Garber and the MLS this week that we didn't really get a response to. For the most part, we've stayed as positive as possible. We see no reason to get negative and rustle up any of the entities involved. But we did ask questions about why Miami is the curious exception to every other MLS expansion. I think just from a business perspective, which Don Garber is a great businessman, so I don't know why he would put a deadline on a real estate transaction. Real estate transactions, which are, you know, high amounts of money, involve a lot of negotiations, which can cost millions and millions of dollars. So why you would make a timetable that was, you know, reliant on a done deal on what could be private or public land, and public land can sometimes go to referendum, which is a vote. So it's curious, and we asked a lot of questions. So far, we haven't gotten answers, and like I said, we are trying to keep things positive. But, you know, seeing markets come in like, you know, New York City, which doesn't currently have their stadium plans finalized, and if they do, it was certainly well after they were already granted a team, and many other expansions. I mean, we just seem to have these exceptional rules to our expansion, and we're more than willing to answer, you know, questions about why that is, but so far we haven't heard anything back from the MLS.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty interesting to hear, and I don't understand why, like you said, and like what I've just said, there's a timetable on this project for no reason. I just don't seem to understand it. Now, I try to be as proactive as possible. As you know, this is an American soccer show. I want to help American soccer become bigger and better, and I would like to see MLS thrive in Miami. Now, as I've already said, I've looked at Google Maps myself. I have read Miami is creating, I don't know if it has started broken ground on it yet, but like a Grand Central Terminal for incoming trains, like for Amtrak, like for the Tri-Rail. Even for the local Metro Rail trains that are going around downtown Miami. So if this thing is being built and will be ready for 2017, and I do know currently there is a deal for a temporary stadium at FIU Stadium, here's my idea, and if I'm wrong, it's fine. I'm just giving you my opinion. What about the current Miami Amtrak station? Once the new station is finished, obviously they're going to have to tear it down, the old one, and you still have a Tri-Rail station there, and you still have a Metro Mover station in a crossroads. Would you think that's a great location for at least near or in the Miami area for a soccer stadium?
I guess the issue, and are you talking about putting a stadium near or around the downtown Central Station?
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. Because, or because they are building. I read an old article a couple, maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago, that they're building a brand new terminal train station that will have Amtrak, Tri-Rail, and maybe other local trains stopping in there, kind of like Grand Central Station in New York City.
Right.
So if they were going to do that, that would mean that the Miami Amtrak station, where it's currently now, near Northwest 79th Street, near you need Northwest 37th Avenue to enter it. Once the new terminal train station is built somewhere in downtown Miami, I mean, Amtrak's going to have to tear down the old station house where it currently sits. Would that be a good place? Would that be a good place to build a stadium? You would know. I'm just throwing a suggestion.
I definitely think so. The stadium options that we work on are ones that have been told to us both by Miami Beckham United and recommended by the commission. We send in ideas like that and many, many others all of the time, but until they confirm it, there are little things we can do here and there to help with specific stadium sites, but we try not to spread ourselves too thin. I believe we've recommended that site before and many others, but there is a list of about maybe 6, maybe even 10 if we stretch it, potential sites that they could go after.
Yeah,
not one of them right now. They've never mentioned that one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like I said, it's just my suggestion. You can run with it if you want. If you want to reject it, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not concerned
about it. I have a meeting. I have a meeting with them probably next month. I'll bring it up.
Hey, why not? Go for it, and we'll see what happens.
Exactly.
Why not? Because if we're going to make this project work properly, obviously.
Right.
See, I want MLS to thrive wherever they can be. And if we're going to take this MLS to Miami movement very seriously, not just from Southern Legion, not just from everyone who's local in the Miami area, as well as, you know, those that live just outside the Miami-Dade County area, as well as everyone else that supports our first division, you know, we got to see this go through, and every single section, if it's a possible area, needs to be sorted properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as the Southern Legion as well, we don't just – our primary focus right now is getting MLS to Miami. It has been for the past 7 to 10 years. But after that, we are even going to be supporting second division, third division, fourth division teams remaining in the South Florida area. Because, you know, not that Miami's anything like London, but London has 10 teams, and a bunch of stadiums. And I think having that much, we can have a lot more professional soccer in Miami than just even one first division team and one second division team and a couple of third and fourth division teams. I think we can have a second division team in each of the major cities. And, you know, we're looking at that as well. And we want to support the Strikers. We want to support other clubs like that. But obviously our primary focus right now has to be Division I in Miami. But we're South Florida focused as well.
No, absolutely. And that's the whole idea. I mean, the idea is that, fine, we have other clubs in the area from different divisions, but still the idea is to hope and pray that American soccer as a whole is thriving, surviving, and doing well. And hopefully these certain situations, they don't creep up, and you hope and pray your club doesn't disappear again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the good thing that I've seen so far with the group returning is that they're extremely confident, and these are in, you know, fairly private meetings we'll have. That sort of confidence definitely helps us continue to move on. I think that, even if they don't know exactly where they're going to be, they're very, very confident that they're going to make it into the league, relatively soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish we were in the league right now. I think that we qualify for it.
I don't blame you at all, and I understand where you're coming from. Listen, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. You tell Ed he owes me a beer, And listen, next time you want to come on, more than welcome to jump back in to give us another update of what's going on. Thank you again, and have a good night.
All right, thank you very much for having me on.
No problem at all. It's Brian Corey, Vice President of the Southern Legion in South Florida. As, you know, look, they want to be back in MLS. I don't blame them. Hopefully, there will be a stadium available or a site to build one on. I just hope it's the right thing to do. Not the right thing to do, but the right plot of land to make this stadium happen. That's what's most important about this. And Ed Serrano was supposed to be on. Unfortunately, he owes me. That's another story for another time. Doug McIntyre from ESPN the magazine could not join me live, so we recorded this afternoon. The whole Jurgen Klinsmann fitness problem, and we've seen signs all of a sudden that some U.S. fans want Jurgen Klinsmann out. I don't know, a big uproar. So here's that taped conversation right now with Doug McIntyre from ESPN the magazine.
Voices Fire American Soccer Show once again. Very pleased and very happy to have this man on again to talk about world of U.S. soccer, and that is Mr. Doug McIntyre from ESPN the magazine. Doug, thanks again for being on the show. How are you?
I'm good, Denny. No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem at all. Before we get into the match, obviously, I got to say, Jurgen Klinsmann's comments about the fitness of the American soccer player really hit home with some of these fans, as well as some members of the media, television media as well. What did you think when you heard about Klinsmann's comments?
I think they were taken a little bit out of context, Danny, to be honest with you. I mean, he was, and I understand, and the thing people need to understand about Jurgen is that English is his second language, and he doesn't always articulate himself the way I think he wants to. He was talking about a few players in the camp in particular that showed up that weren't in shape. And he's right when he says that it's hard to be ready to play at the international level when players haven't played a match for their club since October. Those are facts. So I was a little bit surprised that it became as big a story as it did in a lot of ways. You know, Jurgen, everything he says makes news. He invites controversy. The way he says things sometimes are very direct. He's very German that way, even if he's, you know, very Californian in a lot of other ways, not your typical German in a lot of other ways. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was a little surprised, but not too surprised because it is Jurgen that it did generate so much discussion. But he had some good points, but I think the bigger thing leading up to the game was this idea that that Jurgen's not taking responsibility or his share of the blame when things don't go well for the U.S. And I think that's a valid criticism. So maybe that explains a little bit of the hubbub, but I think it was a little bit overblown, to be perfectly honest with you.
I agree with you because, you know, I was shocked, and you posted this on Twitter, two signs, one saying, "Show the red card to Jurgen, JK out." I mean, look, I understand that no one likes to see the USA lose, and I understand that completely. But, you know, after the first game of 2015, I know it's a five-game winless streak that, well, finally it's broken, but still, those signs were so premature. I don't understand what the fans are talking about.
Well, I mean, you know, you remember, Danny, the Fire Bradley signs that we saw. So, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I think that the fans are off base. I think it's premature to call for, you know, just because at this stage of a 4-year cycle, they've lost a few friendly games where, you know, a lot of first choice players weren't available. There was a lot of experimenting going on, mass changes in the second halves of games when a lot of goals were scored against the U.S. So, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to call for Jurgen's head right now, but that's the nature of fandom. You know, people have a say, they're entitled to their opinions, and when you lose three games in a row and when you win one of nine, and you know, that's what happens. That's what happens in other sports. It certainly happened with Bob Bradley, who you know, had a much shorter leash than Jurgen has, and this is the first time we've seen this in almost 3 years with Jurgen, and, you know, he's, I think, been successful overall, but there's certainly been periods where the team wasn't playing well before, particularly in World Cup qualifying. You really didn't see anyone saying that Jurgen should be fired at that time, not really. You certainly didn't see signs in the stadium, so... I think it's interesting. Maybe it does show the evolution of U.S. soccer, and it's funny. The guy that made the sign tweeted at me earlier today, and he said he just wanted to start a discussion and put some pressure on Jurgen, since he says that there's not enough pressure from the media here in the U.S. So I thought that was pretty funny, actually, that he said that. But, you know, fans calling for the coach's head is not a new thing in soccer or any sport, so I don't think you can be too surprised by it.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've had many, many times, or what was it, the Ukraine match before the World Cup began, all the way back in March last year, February, March, and all of a sudden it's like I had a listener on my in the chat room saying, you know, get rid of everybody, get rid of them all. I mean, they lost 2-0 to Ukraine, but still, I mean, you know, that type of a match, you know, sometimes as a fan you have to understand, you know, it's more than just a match. Because, as you know, and we're not trying to mix politics with sports, obviously, but, you know, the Ukrainian national team was going to be inspired because of the recent events of what's been going on with them and, of course, their neighbors with Russia. So, you know, even if they did lose 2-0, and it wasn't a great performance, but still, you would have to think the Ukrainian national team was going to be inspired and try to win for their country that day.
There's always reasons and valid reasons and things that come into, you know, that come into a game. It's hard to go to Chile and play a game and fly 14 hours. And the U.S. flew commercial and connected in Lima, Peru, to that game. You know, you're playing against players that are in season when you're not. I mean, people don't want to hear excuses, but there are reasons why things happen. And again, I do think it's part of the evolution of U.S. soccer that, you know, people are upset. I talked to my soccer editor at the magazine the day after the Chile game, and she's like, what's going on? You know, how come the U.S. can't win a game like this? And I said, well, there are reasons, but Chile's a very good team. That's even if it's a domestic squad, you have to respect that there's a lot of good teams in the world, and there are difficult situations that you go into, and especially if players haven't been playing. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is explainable, but it's a good thing that people expect the U.S. to win every time they go out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the number one hope, is that the USA will win these games. And if not, look, then we can point to the real reasons why they didn't really do well. Other than that, look, I'm glad that the streak is over. 2-0 defeating Panama over at the StubHub Center. I almost said the other one, the old name. That's $10 in the cookie jar out of my pocket. But, you know, about the match, I thought so much better from everyone. You see why Jozy Altidore is really needed. Even though he's the lone striker, he can also cause havoc when he doesn't have the ball. And at the same time, my God, Giassi Sardes, I think he's here to stay.
I think so, too. It was... a very impressive camp for him, not just the two games. And the interesting thing was, I was there twice. I was there at the beginning of the camp before they went down to Chile and then came back, obviously, for the match. But even the first time, and there were only a few days in, and the first few days were spent mostly doing fitness. I don't know how much actual soccer they were playing, but Michael Bradley said, you know, even after a few days of training, that Sardes had really stood out, and he was really impressed by him and by his attitude. He's a mature kid. He's 23. But he's really mature for his age. He is very willing to learn. His teammates with the Galaxy raved about him last year. He's gotten better and better. He's improved. That's what Bradley said after the game. He said, you know, he started out well and he improved during the course of the camp. And that's difficult, because consistency is something young players struggle with a lot of the time. So this is a guy that really wants to make his mark. He came in shape. Jurgen made a point of saying that in the press conference on Sunday. He is going to be around. He's going to be part of the group. He's earned that. He's the guy that's emerged this January camp. There's always one or two players, or sometimes on rare occasions more, but Sardes is the guy this camp. I don't think there's any other player, maybe Steve Birnbaum from DC United, the defender, that really sort of, you know, came in and made their debuts and look like guys that are going to be called up pretty consistently going forward. So definitely excited about Zardes' performance and want to see more of him.
What's your sense about Miguel Ibarra coming from Minnesota United FC? Now, obviously, maybe a couple, two, three games ago last year, he only came off the bench. Now he got at least 78 to 79 minutes worth in his first start on the national team. What's your honest opinion about Miguel Ibarra? Do you think he has a legitimate chance to maybe be in a Gold Cup squad or a World Cup qualifying squad? What do you think?
I think he has a legitimate chance because Jurgen Klinsmann really likes him. That's clear. And he's also a different sort of player in the U.S. pool. There's not a lot of natural wingers in the U.S. pool. He's a left-footed player, which makes him even more of a commodity. And he's really quick. I didn't think he was great against Panama. His first start, obviously, I think he'd only played a couple minutes before that, really, like you said, off the bench. So I wasn't super impressed by him, but in the match I thought he deserved it. That was understandable, but Jurgen likes him, and he's going to continue to use him. And I think the thing that will be interesting will be to see where he's playing his club soccer this season. Obviously, he's still with Minnesota United, the lower division club, second tier. So we'll see what happens if he goes to MLS. You know, I think a lot of teams might be interested in him now, but we'll see what happens. We'll see where he ends up playing, and you know, we need to look at him a little bit more. But I, from all we were hearing and all we saw, I think Jurgen's going to continue calling him up for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Listen, we always talk about, with the national team, obviously tactics, formations, more formations now because Jurgen's mixing it up a little bit. He went 3-5-2 down in Chile, and then he went back to the 4-4-2, which I think it's the bread and butter of the U.S. national team. But if there is a change, so be it. You know, it all depends on the attacking and what the game plan is from Jurgen. But this time he went to a 4-2-3-1, or to me it was a 4-5-1, however you want to put it. Do you think there has to be a change in formations for this national team to move forward, or do you think 4-4-2 is going to be their bread and butter no matter what?
I don't know, Danny. You know, people talk a lot about formations. I think too much is made of them, actually. But, you know, and you know, teams play fluid. They change in the course of the match. They change depending on who has the ball. But the 4-2-3-1 that we saw on Sunday, for me, that's a formation the U.S. has been – good in, and that was the one they used in qualifying when they went on that run in the summer of 2013 where they were able to put a lot of wins together. So I like it, especially if Michael Bradley's a little bit deeper, you know, and kind of has the ability to join in the attack late, something he's been successful in doing over his career. So yeah, and also I'm not a fan of, you know, the one striker on the flip side up top, even though Josie seems pretty well suited to that role. But with Dempsey right underneath him, he's almost the second striker. So, you know, I think that Jurgen ideally, you know, he likes to use fullbacks. He likes outside wingers, but there's just not a lot of players in the pool that, you know, that can help him play a 3-5-2 or a 4-3-3 effectively. You know, I think Jurgen maybe would want to use one of those systems, but 4-2-3-1 for me is something that I really like the U.S. in, and I think they, you know, it's about finding the formation your team plays best in, and I do think they play best with four at the back, and I do like Bradley in that deeper role, even though he'll, you know, we'll say that far too much has been made about it. You know, he is, for me, he's better lying a little deeper. He can help clean up some stuff defensively. And he certainly has the engine to go both ways, and we've seen that he can, that, you know, as an attacker, he can still play balls over the top from that position, which he's gotten very good at over the last few years. He can still play through balls from that position, and he can also crash in the box and make things happen. So I think Bradley's best when he has more of the field in front of him, personally. So whatever system gets him in that spot, I think is really key to the U.S. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on going forward.
And that's Doug McIntyre from ESPN The Magazine. Dougie, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon. Have a happy 2015.
Thanks, Danny. My pleasure.
And that's, once again, Doug McIntyre from ESPN The Magazine on the U.S. Men's National Team. Of course, Jurgen Klinsmann's comments, you know, I saw that sign saying Jurgen Klinsmann, JK, out, give the head coach a red card. Look, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do about it. And I think it's way premature. Fine, you can disagree. But I don't think threatening him to be fired, I think right now that's way premature. So everyone calm down. Everything will be fine. And as you saw, 2-0 was the result for the United States as they beat Panama over at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. And now it's time to talk about, oh, was I salivating when the setup for the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup came out. Joining me to talk about this, my fellow Soccer News Day writer, my colleague, Mr. Ray Marcham. Ray, welcome to the show for the first time. How are you?
It's doing very good. How are you doing tonight?
Ah, so far so good. It's a pretty cold evening here in the Northeast. I know you probably got your own little cold weather in the Northwest.
Well, it's actually fairly warm. We've had a warm winter out here, so at least it's dry, which compared to the typical Northwest winter we've been having has been a rarity as of late.
All right, that's it. Off the show. You're done. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Thank you.
No.
Weather report done. Thank you. Watch the weather show.
We're not going to play that weather game here, Ray, okay? I'm giving you a fair warning right now. No weather games. Gotcha?
gotcha.
No, I'm only messing around. You know I'm only messing around. But anyway.
Oh, yes.
You know, I got... Yeah, of course. I got to tell you, Ray, I was happy when U.S. Soccer made this 2015 setup a little bit of a quirk here and there, but I love it. I think it's fantastic. And you know what? I don't have a problem with it. I really do like it. 91 teams are going to be gunning for that Lamar Hunt trophy at the end of September. This is going to be exciting.
It's going to be fantastic. I mean, this is the biggest tournament that the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup has had. A combination of more amateur teams and obviously more teams among the professional ranks. And with the tweaks that they're hoping to do that will keep the geographical aspect of the matches good and maybe cut off some of the somewhat unnecessary travel in the early rounds, this could work out very well.
It really, really has. And I'm being honest when I'm saying this. I'm excited because apparently there's going to be, I mean, we all know about how they draw these games. They want to be geographically easy for most of these teams from the lower levels, the minor leagues, MLS and everything. But what I'm excited about, after all four rounds are done, there's going to be a new draw for the round of 16 where it doesn't matter what league you're from. It doesn't even matter if you're going to be one of those MLS USL affiliation setups or it's an MLS 2 team in the USL Pro League. You're going to get drawn blindly, even though it's still going to be geographically. I think that's a great quirk that U.S. Soccer and the Open Cup Committee has done. This is going to be fantastic for the fifth round.
It's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be pretty much a set bracket from that point forward. So it's what once that draw is made for the fifth round, you can look at that round of 16, and you know what your path is going to be to get to the final at the end of September, and that helps clubs and so many ways that they can plan out just in case, and for the smaller clubs they can budget and plan as they need.
Yo, absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. I'm very excited about it. And of course, all 17 MLS clubs are going to be coming into round four. And here's the thing that I'll be honest with you. I thought we might see either Orlando City or New York City FC starting round three, because I thought that We're going to see, you know, all six. You're going to see 16 MLS sides, you know, in round four. But one of those
right.
expansion sides are going to start round three with possibly the NESL. This is, I think it's the right thing to do because now you're going to see. Now I don't know who's going to face whom in the round four match, MLS versus MLS. But still, I think that's a great idea to do this. I know U.S. Soccer wants to separate everything and they don't want complete blind draw, and I understand that. But I think that's a great thing that they just did. It makes it a lot more exciting.
It makes it more exciting, and for the lower level clubs, you know, they know if they make it to round four, that they're going to play an MLS side. You know, like last year when PSC Elite, an amateur club, actually made it to round four, and they got to go to Seattle and play the Sounders. You know, that's a big deal, and they knew once they got to round four, they were going to get an MLS club, and the experience, even though they lost, the experience is fantastic for those players, and that's one of the great aspects on how this draw works out. Because if you're a lower level side, you know, if you're a USL side that comes in round two, you know you've got a good chance of playing an NASL side in round three. Past round three, you know you're going to get an MLS side in round four.
Absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. And everyone wants to know, if you haven't been on U.S. Soccer's website, obviously we'll give you the dates for all the rounds. Obviously, there'll still be a play-in round. There's going to be San Francisco City FC that will represent U.S. club soccer. We don't know who's played or representing the USSSA. USSSA. We'll go there. I don't want to add another S by accident, or else I'll be in trouble. we'll play, I believe it will be either two PDL clubs or NPSL clubs that will be geographically closer to them. So we'll see what happens. And those games will be between April 22nd through April 26th. And, of course, round one will be Wednesday, May 13th, with every lower level team from PDL, NPSL, U.S. Adult Soccer Association, all four regions, and, of course, whoever wins the play-in round games. And then the Wednesday after, May 20th, will be the 21 USL Pro clubs facing on the 21 winners of round one. And then the third round will be on Wednesday, May 27th, and that will involve basically round two winners as well as the nine American NASL sides. And then MLS comes in the fourth round, which will be
right.
Well, I'm glad we're going to have some separation here, June 16th or 17th. And, of course, I really hope it'll be June 17th because I don't want to see any clubs playing during the Women's World Cup match that's going to be there. And that'll be the last group match, I think it will be, Ray. So let's hope
yes.
All these games will be on the 17th, which will be on a Wednesday.
Yes, they've done fairly well in trying to schedule matches on Wednesdays. In past years, even the matches where a club does have to travel. You know, for example, the last few years, West Coast clubs have had to travel to the Southeast to play Carolina or Charleston or Tampa Bay or Orlando City. When they were in USL Pro, they've had to make those treks down. They've played those on Wednesdays, and then they've had to travel on to wherever afterwards.
Uh-huh, absolutely. You're not talking about the Galaxy Jinx down in Cary, North Carolina, are you?
Jinx? What Galaxy Jinx in Carolina? Bruce doesn't like no jinxes.
You mean the 0-3? The 0-3 at the Wake Med soccer court? Come on.
You just knew... You knew when they were drawn together last year, oh, Bruce Arena, oh my goodness, here we go again.
It's called, I don't want to really start anything with Bruce. Okay, fine. I'll do it.
Go ahead and start, yes.
That's it. Pilates revenge. There we go. But anyway, Yeah, we're going to talk about the Ofer, that's for sure. But and then, of course, the fourth round will be June 16th, 17th. And then on Thursday, June 18th, will be that fifth round draw, which will be four groups geographically, regardless of league affiliation, which is – we'll get to that in a minute, as I have an idea about that. But we'll get back to that in a minute. And then we get to the fifth round match, which will be on June 30th on Tuesday or July 1st on a Wednesday. Quarterfinals will be in July, either the 21st or the 22nd, or maybe both. I'm hoping – well, see, here's my problem. I don't want to talk about a problem, but, you know, this is when the Gold Cup – I think it will be like the semifinals will be around that time. But then again, I don't want to complain about it right now. I'm just excited about the Open Cup. Semifinals will be either August 11th or 12th, and then the final will be on September 29th or 30th. Professionally, 47 teams will be joining in there, and then the rest will be amateur teams. So this is going to be a really, really fantastic Open Cup 2015. Once again, the Open Cup committee has done a very good job.
They've done a fantastic job, and there's still spots available. I mean, on, for example, on the 20th up here outside of Seattle in Tukwila, The two Northwest clubs in the NPSL are going to be playing for a chance to play one of the California clubs in the NPSL for one of those five remaining spots in the Open Cup. So it's qualification is still going on for this, and it will be pretty much right up until the play-in round. And the USASA. They'll be having their tournament at the end of March in Kansas. That's going to help determine some of their final position.
Yep, absolutely. And obviously, we see the KC Athletics. Obviously, I don't want to go back into that mess because that was a bit of a mess. But you know, glad to see them coming back. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to go back into it. That was a big mess. The field wasn't the proper dimensions. They decided, you know, it's either a replay or a forfeit, and I guess, you know, they took the forfeit because they didn't want to mess around anymore with the whole field dimensions, which I don't know. You know, it happened, and I don't want to bring back that whole thing up. It's already happened. It's done and dusted. So, but here's the thing that I want to talk about with you, Ray, is this. Now, obviously, when, you know, Fox Sports 1, or you go to YouTube now, everyone has a YouTube channel. Like the English FA has a YouTube channel now. They show live broadcasts of every round that's drawn in the FA Cup, and we all know it's a flat-out blind draw. It doesn't matter what league you represent. You're going to face either a fellow Premier League team, or you might face a Championship League team, or Football League 1 or Football League 2 team. Here's where I think I believe the U.S. Open Cup can even get a lot better. And I think what U.S. Soccer should do, and once again, if they want to take my advice, it's fine. I'm not charging them yet. I'm just joking. There would be no charge. This fifth round draw that they have, I think this type of draw should be done. And instead of not a blind draw, but at least do this. And this has been my idea for a long time. Round one, You'll depending on how many teams you're going to represent from PDL, NPSL, USASA, and NPSL and whatever, you should have two pots. One pot all PDL. Second pot will be the mix of NPSL, USASA, and whatever other league is around. And then one ball per pick will be the matchup. What do you think about that? For all four regions, Region 1 East, Region 2 Central, Region 3 South, Region 4 West. And then you just do the same thing with Round 1 winners, and then the USL Pro teams, and then you do Round 2 winners, NASL teams, Round 3 winners, MLS teams, like the whole thing. What do you think?
On paper, it sounds like a good idea. You also... The situation is you've got to balance out some where the teams are. Sometimes there's a large number of teams from a specific area, and maybe you have to pull one pull women club away and move them to another region. It sets up in that a whole lot like the NCAA basketball tournament, where you've got the regions, but in a sense, not every school is from that region, although they try their best to keep the travel short. With 64 teams in that tournament, it's pretty much impossible. And that, I think that's what you're describing with the U.S. Open Cup here. And it would be a great idea. It probably works best in the first round, but as you go on second round, third round, and then you start getting into the situations where there's more USL clubs in the South, and you've got more. The NASL has a bigger presence now. It plays in the Midwest. You've got to start figuring out. Okay, who are we going to send west? Who are we going to send to the Midwest? And that's where the situation gets a little tricky. And you also have to hope that those EL clubs or USL clubs that are affiliated with an MLS club doesn't advance beyond a certain point, because then you're getting into the whole complication of you've got to take the regions to locate their parent club.
Well, you know, like I said, it's just an idea. I don't know if it'll ever happen. I mean, I forgot to say this. You keep the coin flip, whoever wants to host it, like heads for coming out of pot one, tails for coming out of pot two. So there we go. I forgot to mention the coin flip. So, yeah, throw that in there, you know, every time there's been a drawn ball or whatever. But still, like I said, it's just an idea. And you know what? It wouldn't hurt to actually broadcast it on U.S. Soccer's YouTube channel, because as we've seen, there's been some complaints, obviously, about is this draw fair and everything. And, you know, I think this would be a way to fix it. So at least I think that's what U.S. Soccer should do.
They should be showing the draws live anyway at this point, just because as the FA Cup draws show, just the suspense of trying to figure out who's going to be drawn with whom, that's enough to keep people tuned in throughout an entire draw process. So it really should be broadcast. Even if it's just on YouTube, it really should be broadcast in some way.
Absolutely. All right, Ray, final thoughts here. Obviously, there's $250,000 on the line to the winner. And, of course, that prestigious CONCACAF Champions League spot in Pot B on the line for 2016-17 or 15-16, whatever it's going to be. You know, once again, I'm happy with this setup from U.S. Soccer. It sounds like you're happy with the setup from U.S. Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait for the first round, actually, which will be on Wednesday, May 13th. I can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be three straight Wednesdays with the first three rounds. And the great thing about the Open Cup is there's always upsets, and there's teams that's going to – an amateur team that's going to make a run to round three or round four that you've never heard of, and they're just going to be playing out – knocking somebody off they're not supposed to, and that's the fun part of the cup. You just don't know who's going to come out on top. Granted, Seattle around the last 6 years saw DC United winning the cup, and
absolutely.
they won more matches in the cup in the Open Cup tournament than they did in MLS.
Absolutely. All right, Ray, have a good night. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Stan. All the best.
Thank you. You too. Ray Marcham, my colleague at Soccer Newsday, the 2015 U.S. Open Cup setup. And, of course, let's not forget the cup.us. They do a great job covering all the games. I occasionally help them out whenever I can when it comes to their website, because you know why? I love the U.S. Open Cup. That's why. I love the cup. I think it's an important part of American soccer, and definitely I don't have a problem talking about it, because it's always a fun thing to see a Cinderella team getting an opportunity to knock out an MLS side or at least a league division that's higher than them. And, of course, the last one, Cal FC on a big run, managed at the time by Eric Winalda, as they got all the way to the fourth round, upsetting the Portland Timbers in round three, but unfortunately losing to the Seattle Sounders in round four, all the way back, I think, back 2011, 2012. I have to double-check on that, but that was absolutely fantastic. Let's keep on going here, everybody. This is the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show here on blogtalkradio.com. Of course, blogtalkradio.com/ 40 Scenes Fire, no apostrophe above the S. The FIFA Under-20 World Cup will be played in New Zealand this coming May, end of May through middle of June, live on Fox Sports 1, also Fox Sports 2. I'm assuming there'll be some games on Fox Soccer Plus, as the USA drawn, and normally you would be upset if the USA would be drawn against the host nation, but let's be honest, a fabulous draw for the United States, as they are going to be taking on the hosts New Zealand, the Ukraine, and then an Asian country, Myanmar. Now, look, I don't want to say we have a cakewalk here, but the first match for the United States will be against Myanmar. Let's be honest, this is their first time in the tournament, their first time qualifying in an Under-20 World Cup through FIFA, through the AFC, Asian Football Confederation Under-20 Tournament. This is going to be exciting. And if we're honest with ourselves, and we have to be, this is going to be an easy six-pointer. But once again, when you're facing the host nation in New Zealand, it could be a little tricky because they're going to be pumped up playing in front of their home crowd in their home stadium. And I believe they'll be playing in Auckland. So that's going to be an interesting situation. And once again, we are going to see some fabulous, fabulous football, soccer here with the Under-20 World Cup. Second match, like I've said already, will be against the host nation, New Zealand. Then their final group stage game will be against Ukraine. I mean, you'd like to think six, seven points. You're going to qualify out of your group, but that last game against Ukraine in the group stage, that's going to be a very, very interesting matchup. I don't know how good Ukraine is at the moment, but obviously, as we already know, Ukraine is going through some tough times right now, and hopefully the kids won't be affected because of that situation, as I try to take politics out of sport as much as I can. But you hope Ukraine, they'll be able to qualify 1-2-3 and get out of the group as well. And then we'll see where that third place finisher will be. Of course, six groups of four. Let's go ahead and take a look at the next group. There are going to be four African teams that have qualified, that will qualify. Currently, they're playing their Under-20 tournament right now. The African Cup of Nations is already over. Congratulations to the Ivory Coast winning it in penalties over Ghana. So the third place team will be in Group B with group leaders Argentina and then Panama and then Austria. That should be a fascinating group in Group B. We'll see what happens. Group C, we have Qatar winning the Asian Under-20 tournament with Colombia, Portugal, and the third place. Whoops, there's an error here. Well, one of the four African sides that will qualify when that tournament is over. Group D, Mexico, of course, winning CONCACAF. They'll be with the runners-up of the African Under-20 team, and then Uruguay, Serbia. The African winners in Group E will face Brazil, Korea, DPR, North Korea, and Hungary, and Group F, the Germans winning the UEFA Under-20 tournament. They'll be taking on Fiji, Uzbekistan, and Honduras. So that should be a very good matchup. And let me just say this. Unfortunately, FIFA did not say what day the draw would be on, or at least they posted on their calendar. So, you know, that's not – I didn't like that, but what are you going to do? Next time I should probably read the Under-20 World Cup page and find out when the draw is going to be done. But it was done, shall we say, Eastern time, late – I would say probably early Tuesday morning. For them, it's probably late Tuesday evening over in New Zealand. But those are your six groups of four. As everyone knows, top two in each group will advance to the round of 16, and there will be four best third-place finishers, depending on obviously record points and goal differential, as well as goal their goals for and goals against situation to see who will be the top four third-place finishers. But let me just say this. And this is why I like FIFA at times when you have these draws. Obviously, it's not the big senior side, you know, FIFA World Cup, like, you know, what they did in Brazil in a big auditorium or in a big stage setting. But how they did it here in New Zealand, they had their native culture being on display with a group that wears traditional, old-time, I would probably say, Islander outfits that represents New Zealand, with the special face paint, the war paint, with spears, so with shields, drums, dancing, the hand slapping, you know, just to see that happen. To see these guys, these dancers and singers at the same time, you know, let me say this. I like that. And I'm very happy to see that culture coming from New Zealand because, you know, that was cool. Just like in Canada where they try to show their culture as well with the Women's World Cup before they do the actual draw, that was pretty cool. I like that. And you know what? It's just absolutely a lot of fun doing or seeing that sort of thing because, you know, look, we're guys, gals, whatever, you know, we like regular stuff. But you know what? Once in a while, that stuff to learn about is really cool. And that's what I'm hoping for when we get to hosting either another World Cup. If the U.S. ever gets an opportunity to host an Under-20 World Cup or an Under-17 World Cup, I would love to see it being done, you know, obviously, you know, if it's California or Texas. I mean, you know, you got a couple of states right now that you can say for sure that can host an Under-20 World Cup. I mean, let's be honest. It's not going to be all over the map. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see these games being played in different regions. And I think you're going to see at least, let's just say Texas for a minute, okay? Let's just say in Texas. You have Houston at BBVA Compass Stadium. You have Frisco, Texas outside of Dallas with Toyota Stadium. You also have Toyota Field in San Antonio, and then you can probably have a game also probably at Reliant Stadium where the Houston Texans are, possibly at AT&T Stadium in Dallas where the Dallas Cowboys are, and then you can probably have an indoor stadium in San Antonio like the Alamo Dome. So at least you can do three cities in Texas, and you have an opportunity to have it in six stadiums. You can have a Dallas region, you can have a Houston region, and you can do a San Antonio region. I mean, that would be fantastic. And you're taking advantage of the situation that's in front of you. Same thing if you're going to maybe have it all in Florida. Like, you know, Fort Lauderdale's not far. Miami's not far. Tampa Bay, Orlando. I mean, you know, you can always have Orlando do a road trip, like what Toronto used to do when Canada hosted the Under-20 World Cup back in the day. So why not? Why not here in the United States hosting an Under-20 World Cup? I think that would be absolutely fantastic. I think it's absolutely a great idea. Why not host it in either Texas, Florida, maybe even California, with so many new stadiums coming up, as well as playing at the old Memorial Coliseum, the Olympic Memorial Coliseum, Memorial Stadium where the L.A. Olympics used to be, the Summer Games in 1984. Obviously, San Jose has their Avaya Stadium now. I mean, just, you know, throwing that out there. Just throwing it out there and just giving an idea, you know, just trying to give an idea of maybe the possibility of hosting an Under-20 World Cup here in the United States. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Very soon, the next 3 weeks, my 2015 MLS preview shows. We're going to start off with the Western Conference next Tuesday, and then the following 2 weeks will be on Mondays because of the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals, first and second legs, as we will finish off the Western Conference at the end of February, beginning the Eastern Conference in the end of February, and then finishing off first week of March, that Monday, as we get ready for the rest of the Eastern Conference in Major League Soccer, as well as the one-hour New York Red Bull preview hour on the season. Obviously, still plenty to talk about with what's been going on. So we'll see about what's going to happen there. But it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully, we'll get to the bottom of the situation that is involving the Players Union and Major League Soccer. So we'll see what's going on. Sasha Kleiston was now introduced to the New York Red Bulls today at Red Bull Arena. So that is a very cool thing today. And we'll keep on going with the New York Red Bulls news. Now, people want to know, what is going on with the whole Ambrose Oyongo situation? You know, this is a situation where you don't know what other federations or front offices of these leagues from each football federation are involved with. Obviously, they say the Premier League is separate to the FA, but still the FA runs the whole thing. But here's the thing. See, before the whole trade with Montreal between the Red Bulls and the Impact, you know, you read reports that Ambrose Oyongo, when he was still a member of the Red Bulls, was no longer on loan, and he was signed to an MLS deal. That is what you thought, I thought, everyone else thought. Obviously, he got traded to Montreal because it sounded like the agent of Ambrose Oyongo, he was saying, well, you know, they're going to try to go to Europe after this, try to play for a European club. And then the trade was made for Philippe Martinez. And while I can understand why the agent and Oyongo was not happy for this move, I think the truth of the matter is that I think the agent might have done some underhandedness here, more about word of mouth or word of complaint instead of, you know, understanding what the rules are about these types of transfers in North America. So I think look, I don't blame Oyungo for not, you know, for being upset that he's not staying with the New York Red Bulls, because obviously, look, he has played fantastic for the Red Bulls when he gets his opportunity. But the truth of the matter is this, is that you got to give up something to get something. And unfortunately, he was a part of that deal. And I wish him the best of luck in Montreal. I wished he would have stayed and he wasn't part of that deal. But that's what Ali Curtis and Jesse Marsh had to do. You got to give up something to get something. And then what happened? A whole firestorm of insults and an agent not happy with why this happened, why that happened. And it's just a situation where, look, tough. This is how we do things in North America. Sometimes these things do happen. And now, out of nowhere, the front office of either the Cameroonian Confederation or the top league, the Division I league of Cameroon, is saying this is now null and void. Bring him back. He's not playing in Major League Soccer anymore. And we don't know why that happened. And, you know, why did this all of a sudden come about? Was this loan deal illegal? Well, if it was illegal, why did you have a problem with it? Or why didn't they have a problem with it? You know, the middle of last year up till the end of the season. Why now it's a problem when it wasn't a problem then? And this is where I think it's more agent speak and maybe Cameroonian Federation is not happy about something that, you know, we were told is going to be in New York. Fine, he's in New York, but now he's in Montreal because we do internal transfers that do not coincide with a transfer window. It happens. Sometimes that happens. Now, if you're not sure the mechanics of the trading windows in Major League Soccer or from internal trades with each other, whichever, you know, all the teams involved, it's okay to learn about it. It's okay to find out what's going on. They'll tell you. Montreal wants to make sure that everything is done the proper way, and they were definitely within FIFA guidelines and MLS guidelines and everything. So Ambrose Oyungo is a member of a Montreal Impact, but still a Cameroonian national team or the Cameroonian Federation is not happy, or they still feel it's an illegal transfer. And when you saw Ambrose Oyungo do well for Cameroon at the African Cup of Nations this past January, February, you know, you felt good for him. He scored an equalizing goal in the first group stage match. And then he was held out of the round of 16 match because of this whole shenanigans. And that's where I feel bad for him. Here's his opportunity for the national team. He's doing great in MLS. He's becoming a top player for his national team. And now he can't do it because of this whole kerfuffle. This is a kid that is now being basically held back because either the Cameroonian Federation or the president of the Cameroonian First Division League is not happy because apparently there's been some shenanigans going on, even though we don't know what these shenanigans are. All I know is this. MLS says everything is legal. Montreal Impact is trying to make sure that everything is legal. It's all legal. Ambrose Oyungo is a part of the Impact FIFA rules as well. I don't know what's going on. Maybe this has to do with the agent of Ambrose Oyungo. Because if this is the agent's fault for confusing everybody, FIFA should fine and sanction him for what he has done. And in all honestly, I think Ambrose Oyungo should fire him. Because if this is his agent's fault for causing this confusion, honestly, Ambrose Oyungo should fire him for the stupidity that he's done, if there is any stupidity that has been done. Because it's not right, it's not fair to this kid who has been, let's be honest, we'll never know what he's done or what he could have done for Cotton Sport back in the Cameroonian League in the first division. But what he's done in MLS, forget the second leg match in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference Final against New England Revolution where, you know, he lost his composure. But from that point, from the time he came up to that point, he has been phenomenal. He has been absolutely phenomenal. We cannot take that away from him. I hope he'll do well in Montreal. Obviously, they speak French. Cameroonians also speak French. I hope he will be comfortable in Montreal. I know he loved New York City and the area, and I don't blame him. But the truth of the matter is now he's a member of the Montreal Impact, and he should still take advantage of the situation that he was put into. Or if it's the agent's fault for screwing with him, then you should blame the agent. Because let's be honest, that's his fault if he mixed up the stories. I understand the kid wants to make a move to Europe, and we all understand that. Because playing in Europe, it's, you know, the best league, one of the best confederations to be playing club football in. But still, there's got to be some way, somehow, that this kid should not be punished for the stupidity of the agent that has probably screwed this whole thing up for him. I hope Montreal, I hope he'll go to Montreal. You know, he's got to think more about his career right now than other things. Because right now this kid's career, not just club-wise, national team-wise, is in jeopardy if he cannot perform for Cameroon. And I do feel sorry for this kid. I do feel sorry for him. You have to. You have to feel sorry for Ambrose Oyongo, who has done everything right. Obviously, the trade is out of his hands. Nothing he can do. I understand he's upset that he's not going to be with the Red Bulls anymore. But you're still in this league. You're playing in Canada. Montreal's a hell of a city, too. He'll enjoy Montreal. I bet he will. But if this is more his agent being a jerk, then it's his agent's fault for messing him up. Because that should never have happened. The agent should have been familiar with MLS rules as well as rules from within North American professional sports leagues on what trades are done, how they're done, why they're done in North America. From Canada to MLS, Canada to the USA, MLS, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, the NBA, and the NFL. These types of moves that are not during transfer windows will happen within the rules of these professional sports leagues. That's all I'm saying. The agent should have been aware of these things. And if he's not aware of these things, you know who screwed the whole thing up? The agent. And it's the agent's fault for messing up and messing around for no reason. If Ambrose Oyongo is listening to this program, I hope he is. Kid, well, first of all, I hope your English is okay, but still, kid, this is not your fault. I don't blame you. And all I can say is, you know, I hope everything gets worked well for you and everything will be just fine. That's my hope for you. I want to thank my guests tonight. I want to thank Ray Marcham, my Soccer Newsday colleague. I also want to thank Doug McIntyre from ESPN, the magazine, as well as, excuse me, sorry about that. I had to go and clear my throat. I also want to thank from the Southern Legion, Brian Corey, Vice President of the Southern Legion, to come on to talk about MLS coming back to Miami. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. I always appreciate everyone's time. You get the chance live or archived, then please, as always, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you so much. Have a good night, everybody, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now. Take care, everyone.